Ark Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure game where most of humanity shelters underground. But raiders rise to the surface in search of something greater. In the Rust Belt, danger isn't the end of the story. It's the beginning of the adventure. Every journey above ground is a gamble against the relentless machines of Ark and rival raiders chasing the same dream. Explore a lethal yet vibrant world scarred by old conflicts and reclaimed by nature, where shifting conditions make every high-stakes run unpredictable. Ark Raiders. Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X, S, and PC. Rated T for Teen.
Old school security kicks in after the break-in. Too late. Simply Safe rewinds the story, stopping crime before it starts. Active Guard Outdoor Protection uses AI-powered cameras to detect intruders, alert live monitoring agents, and can deter intruders before they reach your door. It's proactive protection, plus a 60-day money-back guarantee and no contracts. To get 60% off your new system, go to simplysafe.com/podcast. That's simplysafe.com/podcast. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
With TikTok ads, our revenue went up $10 million year over year during back-to-school season. Penn Foster is online education. TikTok is great because the reach is incredible for finding a lot of different types of audiences on the platform. Creator content at scale allowed us to easily develop and distribute creator-led ads. Our return on ad spend for TikTok is 21% higher than the next best channel.
Start growing your business today. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/tiktokads.
You got the GM meetings underway in Vegas, and David Stern spoke yesterday. As a matter of fact, we'll hear from Scott Boras today. I'm not sure what time they're speaking. Scott Boras and Brian Cashman both today, and I'm assuming they're going to say things more interesting than Stern's, who just kind of, you know, answered some of the questions without really answering some of the questions. Yeah, they're going to be interested in Alonso and Diaz, but let the market play out, blah, 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 blah. And we talked about how this is a huge offseason here, and I still do have faith that the Mets are going to get this right and go big. And they have to go big here to close the gap between where they are and where the Dodgers are. And that's the ultimate goal. This is not about, you know, trying to get into the postseason. We've seen that. It's about trying to get to the postseason year after year and being a legit threat in the postseason.
Yeah, but you want to do it where you have a runway of, you know, 3, 4, 5 years of obviously Soto's absolute prime and whatever remains of Lindor's prime and all the other stuff that we factor in. I'm of the mindset that the Mets are either going to have an awesome offseason or a bad one. I don't think there's going to be much middle ground, and I'm going to tell you why. And by the way, if they have a bad one, I don't think it will be a lack of effort. I do believe they're going to be aggressive and try to do some serious things here, whether it's trades or free agents. But there's a decent chance they lose two of their best players in Alonso and Diaz. And if they don't lose both, there's a chance, probably I would say better than decent, that they lose one. So that's already problematic, okay? And then you look at the names, and we ran through this to start the show, whether it's a Tucker, a Bellinger, a Bregman, a Bichette, or a Schwarber. And again, varying degrees of interest with those players. You don't view Schwarber as favorably as I might. Bichette's not a really good defender. Bregman's getting up there in age. Bellinger, I think, stays with the Yankees. Tucker's not worth 11 years, whatever, $400 gazillion, whatever it's going to be. So there are answers out there, but I don't know that there's perfect answers out there. So if the Mets were to lose a Pete, and they can't convince somebody like Bellinger, who would be, in my opinion, the absolute perfect fit for the Mets this offseason, their fans are going to be upset. And at that point, all the pressure is on the trade market. And if they don't crush the trades, the Mets are not going to be a dominant team next year.
The other thing we talked about was the report today from Randy Miller, NJ.com, speaking to a Paul Skeens teammate on the Pirates. The teammate says that he believes Paul Skeens wants to play for the Yankees, which, you know, Paul Skeens under control for 4 more years, so it's not likely that the Pirates would trade him. They've said they're not going to trade him. The thing is, at some point, they will have to trade him because you know they're never going to be able to sign him. Not only can't they afford him, he doesn't want to be there. He wants to go win, and he wants to be a Yankee, according to his teammates. So then it becomes, well, when is he going to be available? Obviously, if you're Brian Cashman, you do whatever you can to try to go get him right now, even if that meant giving up Cam Schlittler. We've had that conversation. Whatever it takes to get Skeens, you go get him. But would the Pirates be willing to deal him at this point? If you know you, not that he's unhappy, but You know, he doesn't want to be there. He wants to win. You're never going to build around him. You're never going to pay him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's smart to maximize his value. To your point earlier, there's probably not much difference in value now to what there would be from another year, assuming he stays healthy, of course.
Yep.
The value is not going to get hurt. Now, when you start getting down to 2 years of control, that's where maybe you start to lose a little bit more value. But 3-4 years of control, if you're the Pirates, you hold all the cards in that regard.
I don't think there's anything that they could do to pay him. I mean, they just, on a night-to-night basis, when he's not pitching, they're not a very good team. You're going to have 15, 18, 19,000 if you're lucky on the weekends, and a lot lower number during the week. They just can't generate the funds to justify giving him, what's it going to be, $500 million? Six?
Right.
I don't know what he's going to get. So they're going to have to absolutely trade him. And I was trying to figure this out with Hoff. I don't have anything yet. Pete, if you got anything, let us know. Like, what's the earliest a superstar was traded before he hit free agency? I'm trying to go back. Oh, by the way, I did watch that Expo documentary.
What did you think?
Yeah, I liked it a little more than you, but a lot of the business stuff, the politics in Montreal, which I really couldn't care about.
It wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I like the old player stuff more than the political stuff. So, but I wonder if maybe some of those guys, like, when they were dealt, how many years, whether it's Pedro or whether it's Larry Walker, the Shields was good, but not that superstar. Like,
well, Soto had how many years of control?
Soto had, that's a good one there. I think it was three.
Two
1 year
with
the Yankees and 1.5 with the Padres,
okay, right?
So maybe not quite three. I mean, you're getting into uncharted territory here. I don't know that anybody, I'm not saying that there's nobody, but I don't know of anybody that's been dealt with 4 years to go before free agency.
Yeah, generally, that would never happen.
Never.
A, it's hard enough to see these superstars on the move. B, if you do have a superstar, you're going to ride it out as much as you can, and generally, you would trade them a year ahead of free agency. This is a unique circumstance in that you have a team that you know is a dead team walking. They're not going to invest to try to build around the pitcher. By the time they're any good, at best, he's going to be leaving anyway. It's going to take them. They can't just turn this thing around in the next 3-4 years. So by the time they're ready to win, if that ever happens again in Pittsburgh because they don't try, he's going to be out the door. So why not maybe expedite the process? And let's just say, hypothetically, you trade him to the Yankees. You get Cam Schlittler, who might be able to offset some of what you're losing in Skeens. You get Lombard, Rice, and Spencer Jones or whatever, Dominguez, they can pick their guy. Mm. I mean, you're talking about at least a chance to start building a little bit of a team.
You got to do it. I mean, you got to do it. And I don't know what Lombard's going to be. Maybe he's mini A-Rod. I don't know what Ben Rice. I think that Ben Rice said earlier, and I've said this before, not just today, I think Ben Rice has a chance to be the Yankees three-hitter. I really do. You know, I don't know if he's going to be quite like Paul O'Neill or Mattingly, but Ben Rice could hit, man. So we know that. So if you're the Pirates, that would be appealing. Let me ask you this. Do you think, like, if you had somebody like Skeens at age 23 with many years before free agency, or a position player like somebody as good as Griffey, who is probably the position player comp to Skeens, what do you think you would get more in return for, the pitcher or the everyday?
I think it's a great question. I still believe the most valuable asset in the sport is the young starting pitcher under control, because you've seen guys as they get older, the prices you have to pay for them are ridiculous, even for a mid-level.
Yeah, eight years. He's good, but the 8 years, that's going to be a problem.
He's not Garrett Cole or Paul Skeens, but you had to pay him ace money. I'm not knocking that decision. I told you many times he would have been the one guy I would have invested in. Corbin Burns, same thing. Look at the contract he got. Generally, pitchers are getting paid off of what they did when they were younger under the initial rookie deal. And generally, those contracts, outside of maybe Max Fried and Garrett Cole, don't work out.
I know.
You can pay. So to finish the point about a Griffey, when he hits the open market, it's more sound investment. Not that it's going to work out perfectly, but I think it's a more sound investment investing in the player, the everyday player, as opposed to the pitcher, who you just don't know with the way that things have gone.
I think I agree. It's a more sound investment because I think it's more predictable, the path of health and just what you'll get from somebody. Now, Griffey, of course, hamstring left and right when he goes to the Reds. I'm not talking about Cincinnati Red Griffey. I'm talking about, like, if Griffey came up when he did at the age of 18 or 19, plays his first 3 or 4 years, and then they're like, all right, we have to trade him. He's 23, and he's got 3 years to go before he's a free. I mean, you can make the case that, I mean, I don't know. It is an interesting question, but I would rather bet on somebody like Griffey than Skeens in terms of health.
BT and Sal on the Fan. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Chris is in Seacliff. What's up, Chris?
Hey, guys. How are you? Hello, gentlemen.
Hey, Chris.
You guys were talking about transcendent players. Like, so in the NFL, you got Brady, you got LT, Jim Brown. I'm just going over the history of some of the sports. And, you know, people in Alaska or Oklahoma knew about these players. In the MLB, you got Ohtani, Judge, Babe Ruth, obviously. NBA, LeBron, Jordan, Jerry West.
Bird.
NHL, you got Gretzky, Ovechkin. Okay. So then in tennis, you got the Williams sisters.
Okay, go ahead.
I think the one player that really transcends over all cultures globally is Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that we're even debating that. I think that that's fair, but I also think that that rides over. I mean, he's had 9 leg surgeries and he's had 5 back surgeries. He's not going to play anymore.
Long over. I mean, he's still a big name. It's Tiger Woods, but go ahead.
He brought golf to the mainstream.
I agree with that.
He really brought something. Yes.
Well, Chris, if you're trying to say, and thanks for the call there, Chris, I would say that nobody's had more impact, like downstream after their prime, than Woods. I mean, outside of maybe Jordan with the sneaker revolution, but I mean, before Tiger Woods started playing golf, everybody wore these beige khakis and everybody had bellies. It was like an all white sport with no athleticism. I mean, they were great golfers, but I mean, Tiger made golf cool. Ohtani hasn't made baseball cool. He's maybe opened the door, you know, for more dual threat pitcher hitter. For, I mean, that's obvious, but I think Tiger changed a lot more than Ohtani.
I don't know. In the aspect of, we even talked about this, that we think more players might be now groomed to be able to be a dual player, pitcher and hitter. And I do think Ohtani has made the sport more cool in young kids' eyes, seeing a guy both pitch and hit to the level that he does. Now, I understand the difference where Tiger took a sport that otherwise had not much and made it a mainstream sport. And the impact on that, well, you know, basketball was great. I know Jordan did great things and was the best athlete, you know, arguably the best player of all time, whatever, all those different things. He didn't elevate basketball the way that Tiger elevated golf. So I understand Ohtani didn't elevate baseball the way that Tiger did golf. But because of his unique nature and the way that he performs, I do think that you might see the ripple effect downstream years to come in more players trying to do what Ohtani has done.
Yeah, and I do agree with that part. Yeah, but then you incorporate like the multiracial components of Tiger Woods, his mom and his dad,
right.
And it just seemed to hit every segment of society. And you know, the golf. I mean, think about it. Like when we were growing up, like Ricky Henderson was ridiculously cool, and Griffey had swag, and you know, Strawberry looked like a stud in the uniform, and Dwight Gooden and Matt, like. There were cool baseball players, and Magic was money in the NBA. I'm not saying Jack wasn't great or Arnie wasn't great or any, you know, Gary Player wasn't great, but who was cool in golf?
I mean, I could tell you, did you have favorite golfers before Tiger Woods?
No.
I did.
Who was it?
John Daly, Greg Norman. I love the Shark.
Okay, I had some Shark. It's funny. That's when I first started playing golf, but I didn't like, and I had like maybe a Greg Norman shirt because there was nothing else to buy.
I like personalities. Daly was a personality. I don't know why, but those were my two guys. Now, I didn't love them in watching every tournament, but those are the two guys that I remember. Now, with Tiger Woods, I had a Tiger Woods poster on my wall.
Yeah,
that was a different story.
Wow.
I was in a Tiger.
Yeah, no,
I mean,
me too.
He was my age at that point in 2000, I had the bobbleheads, I had the big pose. I was a huge Tiger Woods fan.
So you're about 20, 21 when he burst on the scene.
Yeah.
I mean, that's prime time.
Yeah. So
yeah,
watching the tournaments and getting into it, him and Phil and those battles.
I became more of a Mickelson guy only because I was playing lefty. Like, yeah. I just love Mickelson, like, just going for it. I seemed like to me, Mickelson was always more human, even though some people say he's a phony, but more approachable with the fans. Tiger was so robotic. Like, I was in awe of what Tiger Woods did, like we all were, but I was more of a Phil guy. Like when they were coming down the back 9-1-2, I was rooting for Phil to win.
BT and Sal on the Fan. Get back to the baseball talk here. Elvis is calling from Orange County. What's up, Elvis?
How you doing, Sal? Hey, Sal, before I tell you who I like to see the Mets do, the thing that bothers me the most about the Mets is Stearns. I just don't trust this guy. He's like a person that wants to buy penny stocks in the stock market. He goes after this cheap crap, and he hopes he hits on them. And we all know how that turns out. But
year one, it worked out. His first year here, it worked out.
Yeah, he got lucky. That's what he got lucky. But look, as far as the Mets, I like to see, like you want, I want Bregman at third. I like to see Beatty at second or Bichette. Plus, I want Alonso and Bellinger. If you want to compete with the Dodgers, this is what you have to do. And then I want Bellinger back in center field.
Bellinger, Bregman, Alonso, and what'd you say in center field?
I want Bader back in center field. Well, I like the guy.
And then where are you playing Bellinger? He's going to be first base and Pete DH?
Yeah, I want to share it.
I mean...
Yeah, that's exactly... I mean, I know...
And then what are you going to do for starters, Elvis? Let's entertain this. What are you going to do for starting pitching?
Okay. Now, I want Mauricio gone. I want McNeil gone. I want Vientos gone. And I want Nimmo gone. Now, figure it out.
And what about the starting pitching?
That's what I'm saying. You get rid of those four guys. I mean, you got to get something for those four guys. They're pretty good. Okay? And then you got to do something with the pitching. I mean, I don't know. That's his job. Figure it out.
Now, I got a question for you. You just said those guys are pretty good. Yeah. If they're so good, why are you looking to get rid of them? You see, you're overinflating what you have.
Well, they're not. I understand what you're saying, Brandon. But, I mean, what else can you do?
No. I like your plan. Guys. I do. Wow. I think your plan. It's also a lot of layers to it.
It's a lot.
It's nine things though.
Now, Elvis.
I know it's a lot, but that's what the Dodgers do.
I hear you.
He's you're not wrong about that, Elvis. Amen. Thank you for the call. Problem is, you got to be somewhat realistic. Bellinger, Alonso, Bregman, Bader.
Bader will be fairly cheap, so it's more the other three
guys. But I'm just saying altogether.
Yep.
He didn't even name
pitchers.
That's
why you use the trades to get the pitching and you use the free agency that you just spend the money, you buy some
you
guys.
You can trade for one guy, Skubal, who's going to cost you $400 million in a year. In this scenario, you'd have at least, let's say, and I'm saying at least, $150 for Bellinger, $150 for Alonso, $150 for Bregman. At least on top of the
Nimmo,
money for Lindor and Soto.
And what about Diaz? I mean, I don't think you need him, but if you do, that's $100 million right there.
I don't think it should be all three of those guys. I would be happy. And maybe it's me settling, and maybe I shouldn't. Maybe Elvis is right, because he's right about the Dodgers. They add stars on top of stars on top of stars. I would be okay with Bellinger and Alonso, or Bregman and Alonso, plus Skubal, plus Suarez. Now, you're adding two top starters.
Yeah.
You're bringing back Pete, and you're adding one of Bellinger or Bregman.
Yep.
Then you could change and trade McNeil or Vientos or Nimmo.
Those are little things, you can mess around with that.
I still think it's important to clean that up.
Sure. I'm not saying you can't. I'm not saying you wouldn't. The other thing, too, and I remember saying this to you a while ago, I think that this is really important, and I'm not saying nobody thinks about it, but people gloss over it. You're getting 20 more starts from McClain next year, unless you trade him. And, you know, Mets won 83 times this year. If McClain, instead of having eight or nine starts, if he makes, you know, almost 30, you guys are probably a playoff team.
Well, that's why I want, say, Skubal and Suarez. Now you have what we like to call a starting rotation. You have a one in Skubal, a two in Suarez, and you work in the young potential top end, McClain as a three.
Peterson four? Where are we going for that, right?
I don't care. Holmes, Manaea, who cares? McGill, 4, 5, 6, you figure it out. As long as you have that foundation with the top three. By the way, in this scenario, let's just say, God forbid, one of those three get hurt. Okay. Well, you still have two top guys, and now you move the depth up a little bit.
Yeah.
That's called a rotation. The Mets had an issue where Stearns just went over the top going with 5 fifth starters. As opposed to 1, 2, 3, or say 5, 3, and 4 starters.
Mm-hmm.
No ones or twos in there hoping to survive, which I do understand to a certain extent. You got to have a little bit better balance in there.
Here's where he's got to change his narrative right now. I think we all could agree that David Stearns is smart. Okay, he's smart. Now he's got to prove that he's not stubborn. Because if he goes back to the same well and tries to pull the same nonsense, try to turn a quarter into a dollar, Mets aren't going anywhere, and fans will not have that.
Don't you think he will be smart, though?
I think he's going to change a little bit. Yeah, I do.
Let's get one more. And Mike is calling from Manalapan. What's up, Mike?
Mikey.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How's everything?
Good.
Good. Let me tell you something. These people talking about not, I'm a Yankee fan and not getting Paul Skeens. Listen, they need therapy or something, dude, especially that guy Frank from Bay Ridge, more like Beirut here. I mean, Skeens, I mean, first of all, think about Spencer Jones. A dude's going to be 25. I've been hearing about Spencer Jones since he's been an embryo in the New York Yankee farm system. I mean, it's a joke. The dude's collecting Social Security. Give up Jones. Listen, do they have faith in Dominguez anymore? What?
Who knows if the Pirates even want him? Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, well, listen, you have the whole top 10. Take anybody you want. I would trade Schlitler. Do these guys realize that the pitchers are a dime a dozen? These guys are always getting hurt.
Well, Mike, don't contradict yourself. I'm kind of with you, but when you say pitchers are a dime a dozen, and then right before that you're saying take whatever you want. What?
No. What I'm saying is the pitchers, like a guy like Skeens doesn't come around every so often.
Understood.
Now you're basing Schlitler on two starts.
Well, it's not two starts,
I mean, look at...
Go ahead, Mike. It's a little crazy. I mean, I would package it all up.
Me too.
You get four or five of their prospects, goodbye. You know what you have next year then? You got Cole. You have Rodon. And you got Skeens.
And Rodon's your four. Rodon. Oh, man.
And by the way, good call,
come on,
Mike.
Guys. I mean, thanks, bro. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we're with you. Thank you for we appreciate the passion. And by the way, if you really love Cam Schlitler that much, just sign him in 4 years anyway. Pirates can't afford him.
Bring him back.
You get Skeens now, Schlitler later.
Oh, man.
Yeah, look, Skeens is a different animal.
You do it.
With Schlitler, I do think that there is an inflation on him because of the one start in the postseason against the Red Sox. I'm not minimizing him. He was not that ever before.
No.
And he was good. He followed up against a good Toronto team as well with a solid start. But he
battled. Didn't have a strikeout but he battled.
The majority of the season, if you go over the game log, he was a good rookie pitcher with potential.
Yeah.
Not Paul Skeens.
No, I mean, nobody's Paul Skeens, but I remember watching his first start. Was it the Tigers? Either way, whomever it was against, I remember coming in saying and diving into the numbers and seeing something and saying it on the air where his average four seam that night was 98.7 miles per hour, his four seam fastball, which was the fastest of, I want to say, any Yankee starter since 2009. It was something ridiculous. So it doesn't tell you that he's going to be Skeens, but it does tell you that his stuff is different because it plays different. And I want to give that a shot. Now, in a perfect world, you don't have to give him up for Skeens, but let's not be idiots. You're going to have to. In a more perfect world, the Pirates trade Skeens next year. I get a full year of evaluation for Schlitler. And if he makes 30 starts and he's dominant, well, then maybe I've got a little different decision. I don't know. At least I have more context there to make the right choice.
Holiday PSA from DSW. This is a reminder that shoes are a gift, literally. So unwrap something good, like boots that inspire your next big adventure. Or cozy slippers that give you an excuse to stay in. Or sneakers that feel like pure joy. Because shoes aren't just shoes. They're exactly what you wanted. Let us surprise you so you can surprise them. Find shoes that get you and everyone on your list at prices that get your budget. At DSW stores or DSW.com.
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that go from work days to weekends and everywhere in between. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. With 25 sizes, 5 lengths, and 6 denim brands, you've got options. And fit experts in every store to make jean shopping easier. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
ARK Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure game where most of humanity shelters underground. But Raiders rise to the surface in search of something greater. In the Rust Belt, danger isn't the end of the story. It's the beginning of the adventure. Every journey above ground is a gamble against the relentless machines of ARK and rival raiders chasing the same dream. Explore a lethal yet vibrant world scarred by old conflicts and reclaimed by nature. where shifting conditions make every high-stakes run unpredictable. ARC Raiders, available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X, S, and PC. Rated T for Teen.
Place. You get this a lot from random, like West Virginia.
Yep, never answered.
I get stuff from Montauk, and I'm like, what the hell's going on? Oh, Zach Gurney. Yeah, it's all over the place.
They try to sell you a $4.7 million mansion. Why don't you pick up? Maybe you could afford it.
You put your phone number on one paper to buy a house, and it's like I get random spam calls for 3 years.
Let me tell you something. I never answer my phone. Unless it's one of my parents.
Yeah, even that.
Or potential. Sometimes you really don't fake talk. Like my dad will call me a lot of times in the car after the show, and I'm like, oh, I'm exhausted. But, you know, I do pick up most of the time.
Yeah.
So it's like one of my parents or like Janet, because she doesn't call, she'll text. Otherwise, I don't pick up. I can't stand talking on the phone.
It's just annoying seeing it, and then it goes to voicemail. All right, anyway, speaking of annoying, Aaron Glenn, he seemed annoyed with the media yet again. I mean, that's been the one constant. Jets couldn't find a way to win for the first 7 weeks. Then they've won two in a row. Players have come and gone. The one constant has been Aaron Glenn having issue with the media. Here was his response to the first question about the injuries that the Jets may have.
I'm going to pass on talking about injuries. Since Rich, he's not here, has all the answers, so you guys can get all the injuries from Rich.
I guess he was talking about Rich Cimini, obviously, who covers the Jets. He's still with ESPN, Rich?
Yeah.
He covers the Jets for ESPN, so then there was a natural follow-up, because obviously Glenn didn't answer the question, and wondering why we got to talk to Rich. Go ahead.
Ask Rich. Well, I'm telling you to ask Rich. Well, you better call him.
No disrespect to you or Rich, but like we want to hear from you. You know, like
you guys have been here. You guys have been hearing from me, but now since we're just reporting stuff, you know, that I haven't said, then maybe you should ask him.
All right. All right. This one annoys me here. This is utterly unnecessary. Now, first of all, if Rich's report is right, and I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be. Like, if Garrett Wilson's out 3 to 4 weeks, okay? No IR, but he's going to be out 3 to 4 weeks. So if that timeline is anywhere in the neighborhood of being accurate, then Aaron Glenn looks even worse. Now, if we come out after the Patriots Day, after the game tomorrow night, and they resume, you know, and he speaks to the media next Tuesday, and Garrett's healthy, and there's a chance he might actually play the following game, well, now Cimini's report looks ridiculous, which, by the way, I don't think is going to happen. Now, that is so petty, what Aaron Glenn is doing. He's just being a jerk. He's being a bully at that point. Now, I'm okay with the quarterback stuff because they're asking him questions and he's trying to build this bubble of whatever around his team and get separation from the media because he doesn't want to get dragged into stuff. It took me a minute to understand that. I do, and I support that. But that was a guy who was just abusing his power yesterday and just being a prick, quite honestly.
I was consistently of the belief of I don't care what he says as long as he wins, and I don't care how the media responds to it. Once he started messing around with the quarterback situation, that's where he started to lose me a little bit. Just name the starter. It's not rocket science here. It's
Montana and Steve Young.
Exactly. You got two crappy starters. Tyrod Taylor, who can't throw, and Justin Fields, who can't throw. And I'm not trying to disrespect those guys. That's the reality of the situation. Now, even after Fields has success, he still wouldn't name the quarterback. So now it's become a game. And this is to a whole different level of... Here's the bottom line. Regardless of what anybody thinks, Aaron Glenn is not doing himself any favors here. He should want to be putting himself and the organization in the best spot possible to have success. And by going at the media in this direct way, all right, fine. You don't want to name the starter? Fine. Who cares what I think? You don't need to name the starter. You want to play that gamesmanship? Okay, go do it. This is now picking a fight with the media because he has an issue with Cimini, which likely comes from a leak from somebody in your own building.
Yep.
So you're mad at the wrong people, and the media is not going to respond well to that. And if I had to guess or bet on the likelihood of how this whole thing is going to end up, do I think that in the end, Aaron Glenn and the Jets are going to be the winning organization and prevail? Or do I think that the media will once again have the last laugh and be dunking on Aaron Glenn when things inevitably, sorry, BT, go wrong for Gangrene. I want to believe in Muji. I want to believe in Glenn. He's not doing himself any favors here, picking unnecessary fights with the media.
And here I was feeling pretty good about things. You know, you beat Cincinnati. It was a fun game. You score almost 40 points. You go into the bye week. You come out. Special teams is popping. McDonald with four sacks. You win again. Oh, by the way, they're playing the Pats. I know the spread. By the way, the spread's up to 12.5. It jumped. It opened to 10.5. It's up to 12.5.
Probably so, based off of Sanini's report with no Garrett Wilson.
Yeah. And listen, they're probably in all likelihood to get squashed tomorrow. But, like, this is really the first game in terms of, like, I would say some, like, palpable interest on my end. I mean, I'm going to watch them anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm very curious how the Jets look tomorrow on the road against a really good team, you know, without Gardner, without Q, with a little confidence, a little momentum. Like, and this doesn't strip that away, because once the game starts, I'll be locked into the game. But yeah, I got to tell you, like, again, just what we heard there, I'm not trying to sound like Timmy Tough Guy. I'm not. And it's easier to say this when I'm in a studio and I'm not in the same room with Aaron Glenn. But I really want to know why one of those reporters yesterday didn't say something, because this would have been warranted, along the lines of, you know, Coach, all due respect, why are you so antagonistic? Like, why are you acting like an ass? You know, before these last couple of wins, you were winless here. Like, why are you doing this? Like, it is the right, whether it's Connor or Rich wasn't there.
Made it even worse, by the way.
I know, he couldn't even defend himself.
Do while he's there.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Or Catanzaro, whomever it might be. Again, I know that journalists, and they are journalists, even though it's different than, like, the back in the day with, like, just a columnist and a beat reporter. It's kind of meshed in now with social media, so you kind of wear all the hats now. But, like, they don't want to be the story. That's generally a line of thought for journalists. I don't want to make myself the story. It's not about me. I'm just a pure journalist. But when you get pulled into it that aggressively, and I like Aaron, and I believe Aaron could be the guy, and I know Muji's had a great couple of weeks here. I'm definitely excited about that. But that deserved a different response than laughs in the room.
And
Aaron Glenn's got to stop
this.
It's also
a very delicate balance between letting somebody be themselves and also trying to help him along. Then I would ask you the question, do you think there's a single person in that building that is going to tell Aaron Glenn the right way? It's certainly not coming from Woody. So who's going to be the one to be like, hey, you know what, AG? I want you to be yourself. Stay true to yourself. Just you
dial it down a few watts.
A tick. Dial it down a tick or two. Good God.
Yeah. Well, think about, who do you think is feeding him this thought process? Who do you think he's talking to that has guided him the most along the way? We know the answer. It's Bill Parcells. Now, the difference with Parcells, number one, now, I don't know what it was like when he had three wins his first year coach of the Giants. I'm sure it was holy hell, because I know he almost got fired. So he wasn't like the tuna and the cool quote and owning the press conference until he started to win a little bit. But the difference with Parcells is that he can kind of make you feel important while still jabbing you.
Yeah.
He had that perfect balance of storytelling and New Jersey cool and New Jersey tough and all that stuff. And again, Aaron does smile during some of this, so he disarms it to an extent. But really, he's coming across as a bully now, and it is unnecessary, this part.
Yeah, and the way that I would start to do it would just be asking, okay, you don't want to answer questions about the quarterback or the injury. Why are you 2-7? Why does your team... Why can't your quarterback throw?
Yeah.
Why your offense inept? Why did it take a miracle to get your first win? And why were you fortunate to barely beat the Browns at home in your second win?
Yeah.
Why are you one of the worst franchises in sports?
Like, yeah. I would almost just make his life tougher. I know. I'm with you. I would
you
almost
play
say
that game, Coach. I got plenty of ammo.
And by the way, I'm gonna have the last laugh when I hit enter and I file my story or I pop the tweet on X here. So Coach, I understand that you don't want to tell us, you know, whether it's Tyrod or Justin Fields. Hey, Aaron, let's be honest. They both stink, and you're the one who ran Aaron Rodgers out of the building.
Yeah, right.
Any regret that, you know, even though you guys won the last game, going into the fourth quarter, your quarterback had 12 passing yards.
Yeah.
Any regrets about that, Coach?
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like, that's, if it turns into that, I'm not going to get on these guys and gals one bit. I really do believe in Aaron. Not just that I want him to win. There's pieces of me that look at him and say, that could be the guy. I think his shoulders are broad enough. I think his chin is stiff enough. But if they start firing back, I will applaud them. Nobody deserves that.
BT and Sal on the Fan. When we come back, we'll have Bo Nickel in studio. Bo Nickel, UFC middleweight, is going to be fighting as the main event on main prelims Saturday, November 15th. MSG, big UFC event, UFC 322. Have some fun with that in studio. Bo Nickel when we come back.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
At Marisa's, we're all about great jeans. You know, the ones that fit you just right. The ones that simply make you feel good. Because you don't just wear jeans, you live in them. Find great jeans starting at $29.90 in stores and at Marisa's.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
ARC Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure game where most of humanity shelters underground. But raiders rise to the surface in search of something greater. In the Rust Belt, danger isn't the end of the story. It's the beginning of the adventure. Every journey above ground is a gamble against the relentless machines of ARK and rival raiders chasing the same dream. Explore a lethal yet vibrant world scarred by old conflicts and reclaimed by nature, where shifting conditions make every high-stakes run unpredictable. ARK Raiders. Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X, S, and PC. Rated T for teen.
Fighting as main event on main prelims, Saturday, November 15th to Saturday at the Garden, UFC 322. Bo, how are you?
Doing well. Appreciate y'all having me on.
Dude, are you nervous at all? Like, I'm not a big fight guy. I'm right. A little bit of a wuss. We've talked about that. You get in there, you throw fists, you're getting banged up. I see the ears and all that. You nervous at all before a fight?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you're going to go fight another dude in your underwear in front of millions of people, so... It's a little bit nerve-wracking. I think a lot of fighters try to, you know, play it off, but it's definitely nerve-wracking for sure.
And it's different in the Garden, let's face it.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I mean, so the heightened sensation and, you know, listen, I mean, number one, you got to be able to do the requisite moves in the fight, that's clear. But to juggle the emotions before a fight and not be too high, not be too low, I think that's a really underrated challenge. How do you navigate that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for me, I think that it's been a long journey in learning those lessons. You know, I started wrestling competitively at 5 years old, and I was on a lot of big stages throughout my youth career, high school career. I was actually able to compete in Madison Square Garden when I was a freshman in college at Penn State, and, you know, competed here again last year. And so I think it's just through experience for me that I've been able to develop a lot of confidence. And it's not really like controlling your emotions necessarily, but it's being able to like understand like the feelings that you have and like just know how to deal with them, because those feelings are going to come, and it's just kind of how you decide to respond to them. And for me, it's like a lot of self-talk and just build a lot of confidence from my training and all the time that I put in. So, you know, for me, that's really been the way I deal with it. And I think, you know, it's working out.
How did the wrestling turn into UFC for you? Why not just go be...
Right.
I know you did some stuff with Hulk Hogan, mm-hmm. Co-founder of Real American Freestyle, which was an unscripted professional wrestling league launched in 2025. Yeah. How do you go from childhood wrestling to UFC combat?
I was always interested in fighting and in the UFC in particular. You know, for me, normal Saturday weekend, I would go with my family to Buffalo Wild Wings and we'd watch fights. And I just was interested in it as a kid. And then in college, I did a couple off the cuff jujitsu classes. And then I had a friend that was on the boxing team at Penn State. So I kind of started learning a little bit of these other martial arts. And I was like, oh, when I'm done wrestling, like, I got to pursue this. It's just so much fun and so interesting. And, you know, having wrestled for, it was up by the time I ended my career, it was a little over 20 years. I was like, man, I'm excited to like be a beginner at something and mm-hmm. and start over and be able to learn all these new disciplines. So that's been real fun for me. And in addition to that, you know, you brought up the Real American Freestyle. That wasn't even a thing when I graduated college. There was no professional wrestling opportunities. And so, you know, the next stage for me to pursue a career professionally was fighting. And you know, now I've been able to do a couple professional wrestling matches as well because I'm still training a lot of wrestling, you know, within my fighting training. And it's a really a best of both worlds scenario where I can, you know, focus on fighting. That's the main priority in my career, but then also get a couple matches here and there.
You know, Bo, a lot of parents and obviously a ton of parents listening to us now, they have young kids. And like before you get on the football field or even the soccer pitch or certainly on a baseball diamond, one of the first things that kids do is taekwondo or jujitsu or something. In terms of self-defense and just overall physical health, what do you think is the best entry into that for a 5 or 6 year old boy or girl?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the way I look at it, the first thing that's most important is being able to control your own body. So like a lot of wrestling training starts out with, you know, gymnastics, tumbling, basic stuff, you know, forward rolls, cartwheels, balance, things like that. So we promote, a lot of like just being able to control yourself before you control somebody else. And then once you're able to do that, you know, you can kind of move into a wrestling, which is a sport where I think that it's good that everybody should try it at one point. You don't have to do it your whole life like me, but you know, I think you should try it because it's one of the only sports where you're out there by yourself. It's you and one other person. You're physically in contact with them, and it's like it can be very humbling, but it can also build a lot of confidence. And you know, a lot of the people that I know that are my best friends, the people that I respect, that I look up to, like they're all wrestlers. And you just have a different mentality when you've gone through something like that and you've experienced it. And I think it helps people in every area of their life, whether they want to pursue different sports or whether they want to pursue, you know, academics or business. You just learn so many different things and it helps build character. So, yeah, I mean, that's for me something that I hold close to my heart is that sport.
BT and Sal on the Fan in studio. Bo Nickel, UFC middleweight. Fighting is a main event on main prelims Saturday, November 15th at the Garden, UFC 322. What's the feeling like walking around knowing silently? I mean, maybe the ears would be a giveaway, but right. Knowing that if somebody steps to you the wrong way, not that you need to do anything, but right. Knowing that you could just, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel relaxed, you know? I feel pretty much like I'm chilling in most situations. But, you know, the interesting part about fighting.
And maybe if we try to get loud with you a little bit or.
You know, not really.
Nobody tried to test you in a bar? Because you don't look physically imposing. Right. You don't look like a mean, intimidating person. So I would think that some people would see you and say, eh, you bump into him at the bar. I wouldn't do this, but get out of my way. Who's this chump? And then, of course, you wreck him.
Well, I live in State College, Pennsylvania. So, you know, it's a small college town. I obviously went to school there. So it's kind of a place like everybody knows me and they have, you know, people follow wrestling in that area. So they all know me. So like, you know, if I ever went out, there would be times where I would see a dude looking at me and I'm like, yo, what's up with this guy? Like, what you looking at me for? And then he'd come over and be like, yo, big fan, man.
I'm
like,
oh, wow.
Like, it turns out I'm the dick. Like, I'm the one, like, that's ready to do it. But no, in all honesty, like, fighting on a daily basis and training, it takes that out of you. Like, I don't have any desire to go fight people on the street or in bars. Like, I'm just like,
kill somebody, you go to jail.
Yeah, like, I'm just not interested in that because it's like, I just did it for 2 hours. So it's like, kind of got it out of my system.
But it's got to be a good feeling knowing that if somebody did step to you, like, I think, oh, man, I'd be screwed. This guy could pummel me. I'm running the other way. What happens on the subway if somebody steps me the wrong way?
Yeah, no, I definitely...
You know what I'm saying?
Not nervous at all. It'd be more of a situation where it'd be like, all right, how do I, like, disable this guy without like really hurting him too bad. So
you're taught to defuse rather than like this guy would want to smash somebody's head against a wooden bar. What else did you play growing up? Like what other sports? Obviously, wrestling was big. You play football, a little baseball, hoops. What'd you do?
I played a ton of different sports. My dad played college football. My mom played college basketball. So I grew up playing football, you know, running track, swimming, baseball.
Wow.
I did pretty much everything. The sport I did for the longest outside of wrestling was football. And I went to high school in Texas, so it was like religion down there. So.
Oh, yeah. My wife's from Texas.
Oh,
I know
great.
It well. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I went to Allen High School. We had one of the best football teams, you know, high school football teams ever. I think we were 3 years in a row undefeated, number
did
one
Stafford
team in the
country. Did Stafford go to Allen? Do I have that
no,
mixed up?
No, Kyler Murray.
That's right. That's right.
Matt
that's
Stafford right. was maybe like Austin.
Okay. Yeah, I know he's from Texas too. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but our team was stacked. I mean, we have many players that have gone Division I, many in the NFL, and it's a great program. So proud to have been a little bit a part of that in a small.
You still friends with Kyler Murray?
I talk to him here and there. Yeah, you know he loves fights, so he'll hit me up after a fight or after a good game. So hoping that he can get back and healthy and feeling good for the season. But yeah, definitely try to support each other.
Does he regret baseball? Like kind of moving on from baseball? Been a little rough out there with the Cardinals.
A little rough, but I think he just followed his heart, right? Like, when you listen to him talk about it, like football is his passion. He's obviously incredibly talented in baseball. He's an unbelievable athlete. Probably could have done anything he wanted, but I respect what his decision that he made because, he just went with his heart and what he loved.
Have you ever been tempted to fix a fight? That's a big thing now.
Yeah, we gotta get into it.
It is a thing. But for me, no. I'm not really interested.
Nobody's ever come to you with the opportunity to?
No, never anybody has come up to me. Maybe they just would assume that I wouldn't do that because it's really not of interest to me. Back when before I was in the UFC and everything, I definitely bet on fights and I felt like I had a good insight as somebody that was an athlete. Obviously now we can't bet on fights anymore, but it was always interesting to me. Figuring it out. And I think now with the way the lines are, people are getting a little, the odds makers are a little sharper. And but I think there was a lot of money to be made back in the day. So, like I said, I don't follow it as much anymore, but I used to bet pretty frequently.
Well, Saucy fits right in. He likes to bet. Right. There you go. Part of the BT and Sal crew. So I think that it's almost easier to throw, maybe not easier to actually execute the throwing of a fight, but to get entangled in that kind of a situation because you think about what's going on with baseball and some of these knuckleheads in the NBA making millions upon millions upon millions. Now, you can obviously make good money in the fight game, but it's not quite as prevalent as some of the more mainstream sports. So if there's a temptation to cut a corner, make 15, 20 large over the years, supplement your income, I would think that the UFC and boxing to a lesser extent is very vulnerable, very.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at it that way. I think that in one sense that, when you're looking at team sports, there's so many different elements and factors that have to go right for you to be able to fix a game. And the fight is just one guy,
right?
So, that definitely makes it easier. But I think a lot of guys just have too much pride. Like, there's too much on the line to, go do that. Not to say that, obviously, that it would never happen ever. But I think most guys, when you're going into a fight, it's like, of course, you want the money, but it's also like your pride, your ego, your reputation on the line. And in addition to that, right, we've seen some consequences for guys that have been caught, and it's severe. It's like it's over for you. You're never fighting again. So there's a lot to consider there. But, overall, I feel like the motivation for winning a fight is a lot bigger than the motivation to make some extra cash.
Just a follow up. So we saw with baseball, obviously do a prop bet. All right, $1,000 on an out on a ball. I could spike it in the dirt. Mm-hmm. I could throw it 7 inches high. There's a ball, bet one. In when a fight is fixed, is it you just tap out early? You actually feign hitting somebody? Like how would you even throw the fight in the octagon?
Yeah, you got to get beat up.
So you really got to just take a lick.
No,
and that's
you're just going to get smashed. Yeah, that's
wow.
the thing. It's not like another sport. So, I feel like there's situations. Yeah, maybe you could tap out early, but it would be so obvious, right?
Like, okay.
You see sports like the WWE or you see a fight on a TV and it's obviously very different from, a real fight. And so I think that from my perspective and my eye, like watching fights, I would be able to tell immediately. Mm-hmm. Like if a guy was like going to lay down, like I would be like, oh, that guy laid down.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sell me on why UFC over boxing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just so much more organized. The UFC's done an amazing job of like putting together consistent events. It's just, when the UFC says they're putting on an event, It's going to happen. Everybody's going to get paid. Like, things are going to be orderly, and they're so professional. In addition to that, I think fighting MMA is just much more exciting. Like, you know, boxing, you know, you have big gloves, two hands. That's, you can throw a left and a right. That's pretty much all you got here. You can move around, like, but with MMA, right, you're punching, kicking, knees, elbows, takedowns, submissions. Like, it's just so much more of a complete sport in my mind. And it's more natural and exciting to me, right? Like, I do watch a lot of boxing, and I enjoy boxing the same way, you know, I enjoy wrestling or kickboxing or other martial arts. But MMA is so complete and exciting, and it really is a test of, like, who's the best fighter, right? I think you can be a better boxer than somebody, but not necessarily be a better fighter.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you're coming off your first loss, right? First loss ever. So
thanks for bringing that up.
I don't bring that up.
Any. I wouldn't do that.
Hey, 113 straight before that.
Keep me humble.
I got you. That's kind of where I'm going. So, like, of course, the training shouldn't be different coming off a win or a loss. It should still be the same level of focus and want and tenacity. And I'm sure that you're as close to that as you can be. But human nature takes over. You know, I'm sure you're on some level, you're embarrassed, you're frustrated, you're disappointed.
Yeah, totally.
So how different is the training and the focus going in after a loss?
Yeah, it's definitely different. You know, I think that when I look back on my career as an amateur wrestler and as a kid and coming up, like, I always, you know, I didn't lose a lot, but when I did lose, it, like, really, it hurt me, and it, like, hit me hard. And at the same time, it was, like, a massive motivator for me. And I definitely feel that with this last fight, that it's been a massive motivator for me. I feel more motivated than I ever have. And it was just really, for me, more of a learning experience of, you know, how to, what I need to be doing in training and preparation to be prepared for the fight. And in addition to that, like, in the fight, how to deal with pressure and things. Like, my first however many fights, it was, like, you know, pretty easy, to be frank. Like, things went exactly the way I wanted to. I didn't really get pressured too much. And so, you know, feeling that in a fight for the first time against a world-class guy, it was a good wake-up call for me in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, something that I'm really grateful for, that, you know, from wrestling, I've experienced a lot of losses on big stages. And so I don't feel like my confidence has been deterred, you know, from that loss, because I've already been there and done that. I've already lost in the national finals, the state finals, the Olympic trials finals. Like, these are situations that I've lost in, that I've felt that, I've experienced that. And I know I'm going to continue to just pursue my goals with 100% effort. And so really that's what I'm focused on. It's, you know, the loss is a motivator, and it's something I'm going to learn from. But at the same time, like, it's just get back on the horse and on to the next one.
Couple more for you here. Bo Nickel in studio, UFC middleweight, fighting his main event on main prelims Saturday, November 15th at the Garden, UFC 322. Are you, what's the opponent like this? Are you big favorite? Where are we at with that?
Yeah, I think I'm a maybe 2-1 favorite, something like that.
I may lay those odds hearing you speak here. You coming off a loss?
I think you should hammer it. That's a
good I'm in, dude. Okay, now I'm sold to Bo. I am watching this, and I am betting on it, guaranteed.
Right on FanDuel. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's been interesting. You guys, I don't know, like, how much, if you followed, like, my career, and especially in the betting markets, but it's been very interesting. I came out as in my first couple fights as, like, it was, like, biggest favorite of all time, like, back-to-back-to-back fights. I was, like, minus 3,000 favorite, like, a couple times. And, you know, it was really interesting. So my first fight, it wasn't in the UFC, but it was on Dana White's Contender Series. They screwed the odds, like, bad. I was, like, 3-1, and it really should have been, like, 50-1.
Ooh.
And a bunch of my buddies laid a bunch of money on me and cashed out crazy.
And that's legal. Your buddies can do it. You can't have anything.
Well, at that point, I could even bet on myself.
Oh,
so
okay.
The UFC changed fairly recently. Fighters used to bet on themselves all the time. I never did it, just because, I don't know, I didn't want to, like, mess up my focus and mentality and stuff. I was like, all right, I'm just focused on the fight. But a lot of my buddies laid big money down on me. But after that fight, then the odds got crazy. It was like nobody could really make any money on me. And so then, you know, this last loss, it's changed it. So, you know, now I think last time I saw was like minus 200, minus 250, something like that.
Dude, we were sold that when he used the word hammer. That's all he did. When he hammer says it. Hammer it, we're in.
One more for y'all on that. What's the prep like? Where are we at? Like, food wise, sex?
Oh, yeah.
Like, no sex, is that a real thing? That's the one area. Like,
I
couldn't get in the ring. I couldn't train. I couldn't eat right. No sex before a fight? Sure, no problem. I'm married for 10 years. Where are you at with that?
Yeah, you got to lock in. You know, for me, it's I'm coming down from about 210 to 186. So it's a significant cut. I'm maybe, this morning I woke up about 195. So I'm feeling a little drained, but that's part of the sport. And
what are we light on up. Carbs? What are we? What
yeah,
are we
yeah. You lighten up the carbs a little bit, and then I have a coach. He's my dietitian that runs me through everything as far as food and workouts. So I don't even think about it. I just do what he says. And it's clockwork for me at this point because I've been doing it for so long with wrestling. I mean, with wrestling, you're weighing in 20, 30 times a year, right? With fighting, you're weighing in maybe 2, 3, 4 times a year. So for me, it's nothing new and just part of the job.
Hey, Bo, by the way, so this might sound stupid to you, but I genuinely don't know the answer. If you are, all right, so styles make fights. We've heard that a million times, right? So you're fighting for one guy. Let's say one guy has a wrestling background, one guy's more jiu-jitsu or whatever it might be, whatever right. differentiator you want to use. As you train for the specific fight, are you training more to impose your style on him or also to counteract what you know he's bringing to you? It's like facing a different pitcher with a slider versus a changeup.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great question. It's a lesson that I've learned in my last fight. I felt like my last two fights, I was fighting guys that were more specialist, jiu-jitsu specialist type guys. And so I really tailored my training and game plan towards them. And I realized afterwards, I was like, man, I need to be focusing on myself.
Got away from what got you there.
It got away from me just focusing on, as you mentioned, imposing my will and my game plan on the guy. And I think that since my last fight, that was a big learning experience for me, is just focus on what I need to do, keep mastering the fundamentals, the basics, and I'll be prepared for any style I face. So really, that's been another shift in my training since this last fight.
You ever watch Rocky?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on, man.
That's where I got the no sex thing from, Mickey Tom Rocky.
You get the wobbly knee.
It's good advice. It's good advice.
What's your favorite Rocky? Which one?
Rocky IV.
Oh, there we go. You got the soundtrack. Yeah, you got the Russian going. Love there. It. But I Apollo dies. That's
no hesitation.
That's a crusher.
It is devastating, but just to see Rocky come back against, in my opinion, the toughest opponent he ever had, it's like just so epic. And my favorite is the training montage.
Oh, it's the best, dude. No easy way out, the Lamborghini.
Too good, it's too good. I love that, though. Yeah, Rocky movies are great.
You miss Hulk. Speaking of Rocky, Hulk was in Thunderlips.
Right.
I know you got no Sal mentioned Hulk mm-hmm. before. You got to miss him, huh?
Definitely. Just such an icon, such a massive personality, a guy that not only changed sport and culture, but mainstream media in a crazy way. And to be part of his professional wrestling promotion is a big honor for me. And his son Nick is the commissioner. He's running the show now in Hulk's honor. So yeah, to be part of that, I'm hoping to continue to help grow that part of the sport, and we'll keep his name moving.
All right, so you fought at the Garden. You'll be fighting at the Garden again on Saturday night. What about the White House? Or producer Hoff's a big UFC guy. Okay. Well, tell me this event. Are you on the card? Do you need to get on there? What do we got going on at the White House?
I need to get on there. They haven't really released a ton of information about it. They're definitely don't have a card set at this point. I think the UFC usually works, maybe 3 to 4 months out.
Is it going to be a ring on the White House lawn?
I don't know. I think that whatever they do, it's going to be insane. But definitely would love to be on the card. Spoke to President Trump about potentially being on it, so I'm sure he'll put in a good word for me.
That's sick. Wow.
You can't come up empty this weekend now.
No, I got to win.
That's true. If you lose 100%. Two in a row, he might not pick up the phone next time you call
him. If I lose 2 in a row, I'm out. I'm out.
That's Bo, you got 2 new fans in BT and myself, and hopefully a lot of listeners as well. We'll be rooting for you. We'll be betting on you on Saturday night. Check him out, Bo Nickel, UFC middleweight, fighting his main event on main prelims Saturday, November 15th, this Saturday at the world's most famous arena, UFC 322. Thanks for your time, Bo. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good luck, buddy.
BT and Sal on the Fan. We'll take a quick break. Come back with your calls, 888-808-1019.
ARC Raiders, a multiplayer extraction adventure game where most of humanity shelters underground. But Raiders rise to the surface in search of something greater. In the Rust Belt, danger isn't the end of the story. It's the beginning of the adventure. Every journey above ground is a gamble against the relentless machines of ARK and rival raiders chasing the same dream. Explore a lethal yet vibrant world scarred by old conflicts and reclaimed by nature, where shifting conditions make every high-stakes run unpredictable. ARK Raiders. Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X, S, and PC. Rated T for Teen.
Old school security kicks in after the break-in. Too late. Simply Safe rewinds the story, stopping crime before it starts. Active Guard Outdoor Protection uses AI-powered cameras to detect intruders, alert live monitoring agents, and can deter intruders before they reach your door. It's proactive protection, plus a 60-day money-back guarantee and no contracts. To get 60% off your new system, go to simplysafe.com/podcast. That's simplysafe.com/podcast. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
With TikTok ads, our revenue went up $10 million year over year during back-to-school season. Penn Foster is online education. TikTok is great because the reach is incredible for finding a lot of different types of audiences on the platform. Creator content at scale allowed us to easily develop and distribute creator-led ads. Our return on ad spend for TikTok is 21% higher than the next best channel.
Start growing your business today. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Whoa, boss, how did that happen?
Mind your business.
I mean, how did a forklift make a shish kebab out of our company truck?
I said, mind your business, Billy. It's why we have auto owners. We work with an independent agent to customize our policies. So when the unexpected happens, we know we're covered. Because unlike you, minding our business is their business.
Oh, that's simple human sense.
Ask your independent agent if auto owners make sense for you.
You didn't do this, did you, boss?
Mind your business, Billy.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.